Hello and welcome to ANK's Wheel of Time podcast, where today we'll be discussing Book 1, Chapter 13, Choices. Now, granted, first of all, we want to apologise to our listeners who have been waiting ever so long for this next episode to come out. But life has just gotten the best of us in one way or another. So here it is. As far as the chapter itself goes...
It has some lulling moments. Like, there are things, like the beginning part of it. I get the whole fact that, time needs to pass, and they get the whole, we're not as vigilant, and it's sort of, there's really no danger at all anymore kind of thing. I get that they need to experience that, but it takes a while for her to get there. Sorry, I'm reading other books and it's a female author. You could so easily get the same effect in a lot shorter span of time and then get to the more interesting things.
Well, this is the part of it's still to me part of the initial kind of trick. I mean, it's, given how long this book is, and Kylie recently bought the actual the actual physical copy. We've been kind of working off the ebook for up until recently, and seeing how thick this book is, it's still very early on in the piece. And so this, to me, is kind of like that scene from Hobbit or Lord of the Rings or whatever, where they're still just getting going and they're still in the early side before anything interesting really happens.
Well, that's true. But see, Jacob, he went right into like poems for pages, so he was ridiculous.
Well, that's Tolkien for you. I mean, he was an English teacher.
Well, so I suppose so. So not as bad, but it still has like some what I find unnecessary lulling moments.
No, I wouldn't call them unnecessary. They need to be in there. I mean, not all adventure is. Kind of sword fighting and picking up bad guys every other day.
No, I know that. I'm not saying that's necessary. I know you need the lulling moments, but it's just describing scenery, and they're just walking along horses, with their horses, and that's kind of basically it. That's all that they, and then they start to murmur. I mean, fair enough. And it's kind of, it takes them a while to get to that conversation. It takes a couple of pages.
True. Now, as far as the actual overall chapter of this one for me can be broken up into essentially three parts. Because you've got this initial kind of part where, as you said, it's kind of a lull moment. But they're trying to avoid being seen by anyone. And during these kind of this part is the Aes Sedai, the other guy.
What are you after?
The other guy that came with the Aes Sedai, the other person. Lamb? Yeah. He takes advantage of the opportunity to
I'm sorry, because there were several other people that could go.
But Lamb's the one who came with the Aes Sedai. Okay. That's Lamb. I've forgotten what his actual...
Moraine is.
Thank you. Sorry, it's been so long, so there's bits
maybe
here which
I'm... Maybe you should have reread the chapter before you...
Maybe, but this just makes it a bit more interesting, doesn't it?
Oh, it makes it sound like you don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly, ain't it great? But anyway, Lamb takes the, takes the opportunity to, start training... Matt Rand and the other guy.
Perrin,
thank you. See, I'll get there eventually. By the end of the chapter, I'm going to have everyone's names mentioned. Then, later on, they change their names, so it's going to be all great. Thank you very much. But we'll get to that a little bit later. But he takes the opportunity to train these boys in the various weapons that they actually have. So archery, hammer... the basic kind of things that they've brought with them from the village. It's kind of a sad story to begin with, but over time, as he continues to train them, they do start to improve.
I find it interesting that some of them are better. Okay. I find it interesting that some of them were better at different tools compared to the tools that they actually had. Like, there were some that were better at shooting the bow and not so good with the sword, and yet others were good with the sword but not so good with the bow. It seemed a bit strange, because they kind of train them in all of them. And it's like, why don't you just swap weapons? If you're better at that one, use that one.
Exactly.
You know, and it was quite good because he did admit, you know, that all of them did well enough with the bows, but there was two issues he had. One was that they had to be able to shoot from a distance and quickly, so that they wouldn't, you know, have them. They wouldn't be jumped upon because they could move quite so swiftly. And the other was obviously that they didn't all have a bow. There was only one between them.
So the thing I'm trying to figure out training fine, but any time that they could possibly even be glimpsed by some remote villager who realistically couldn't care less,
because they're on their farm doing their own thing.
Exactly. He, you know, kind of said, no, turn left.
They went around for hours.
Yeah. Instead of being able to make, make a beeline for the, for the city they're headed to, he takes a very circuitous, kind of weird, very out-of-the-way type route so that no one would see them. And I do get that, part of the reason for that, because, you know, there is secrecy in their mission, I suppose, but even so, these are people who are, you know, these are farmers, farriers, stable boys who really couldn't give two hoots about, you know, people kind of passing through their, you know, the area, and yet, but
they could easily describe, but that's the other thing, though, is that they would be easily able to remember them if questioned, because they are a remote farm village, and a lot of people, especially in smaller communities, do know each other's names and do know what they look like and do know someone who doesn't live there and who would be passing by and remember the general description, because it's a lot easier.
When
you think about it, if someone moves into your neighborhood, it's a lot easier for you to remember their name when you introduce yourself rather than them having to remember six different houses or whatnot around their immediate area or something like that. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to remember a couple of names instead of a whole huge group. Oh, for some people anyway.
Yeah.
Some people are quite remarkable at remembering names, and I've
never been our strong suit. Let's put it this way. We've been living in this area, where we are now, for a little over, let's say, a year and a half. Ish.
Still don't know all
and there are, you know, kind of people at school, people at our church group that we go to, whose names are still like, huh? We know faces, don't get me wrong, but number of times we both just said, what was your name again? Oh yeah, thanks. But anyway, so
I can understand his reasonings for going around. For hours, though, to go around, I thought was a bit much.
Not to mention the pace they're keeping. Because the other thing, too, is that, you know, the water lamb, or land, sorry, he rides ahead occasionally just to make sure that there's nothing to be concerned about, comes back, but make sure that, you know, for lack of a better way to phrase this, they're keeping 10 kilometres per hour. I mean, it's probably slowing that on foot, but, or, you know, kind of with horses and whatnot, but
they're keeping a pace.
They're keeping a pace, which they could be going faster, but they don't want to
attract attention,
or, you know, tie the horses out too much.
I find that is a little funny, because there's no one around to see. They're purposely making it that way, but I do get the whole, you know, keeping them at a certain pace so that the horses don't tire out so quickly. But it was the case of, you know, that he's the precautions that he's taking. In some ways, are a little exaggerating because of the fact that he's doing other precautions which can negate certain others, or at least reduce the risk. So you can afford to do it. Yeah. Anyway, but I do get where he's coming from.
Yeah.
I found the beginning sort of very dull, and it's just sort of like they're just riding, and there's a village that they're avoiding, and that's it, basically. And it's like, well, yeah, I get that. They rode for days, and they saw no one.
Is this also... I'm not quite sure if this was this chapter or last chapter. The other bit which I'm thinking, and again, it's been a while since I've read this one, so forgive me for kind of if I've already talked about this. Is this the same chapter where Rand kind of sneaks in on Moraine?
That's
and
this one.
That's this chapter?
Yes.
Because I found that bit to be very funny.
He they're all, so they're basically, they've done some training, they're slowing down, they're having a conversation about, they have a conversation about wanting,
yeah, here it
to
is.
Potentially,
yeah,
yeah, so they're like, okay, well, so you can,
yeah,
one night.
Well, before we actually get to that bit, it's a bit of an amusing bit just before it.
Okay.
Which I want to talk about first, just so we kind of keep this in chronological order, somewhat. but I'm finding it kind of funny that there are two cities that they could go to. The main one that they're aiming for is Baelon, but because apparently that's closer in the direction of where they're going to, so that they can get to the city of the Aes Sedai. But there's also another one that. Is also a little nearer called Ilion, which I'm kind of guessing is the kind of a small Vegas of the area, maybe Reno, kind of the way I'm picturing Reno or something. For those Americans out there, where it's kind of like a small party town. And as they start talking about this, they've been pushing this pace for a while, and they're wanting to take a bit of a break, something which I get, but. They do get reprimanded for it a bit because, they haven't seen any side of the drag car or the Shade or Trollocs or anyone else for since they've crossed the ferry, essentially. And they're starting to think, okay, we can relax a little bit. Let's go to this small city here so we can just take a few days to chill. And Len lets him have it. No, not Len, Moraine. Sorry. Let's him have it. And is that, just to kind of read this small part, is that the way you all feel? You're all eager to run off to Ilion and forget about Trollocs, Halfmen, and Dragkar? The Dark One is after you three, one or all. And if I let you all go running wherever you want to go, he's gonna find you. It's just been... And there's been no sign of their foe for ages, and they want to take a bit of a break, and she's like, hold on. Don't forget that you three, or at least one of you three, has got a target on your back. I don't know which one yet. One of you three does, and if I let any of you out of my sight, whichever one is the one that the Dark One wants, he's going to get.
It's not so much that. It's just that they wanted to... Matt's mentioned that he wanted to Perrin had said, don't you want to see the world and such, and see what a real world is like. I was right, Perrin had interrupted him. Matt, yep. One that originally had said, what do you think a real city is like, and they're like, well, we're going to Baelon, and it's like, well, yeah, but, that's heading on the way to the Aes Sedai. I don't want to go to the Aes Sedai. I want to go to a real city. And yeah. I think that is the...
And again, I can understand the mindset to a point, but I also find it funny, find it a little sobering, I guess would be a better word, that her last comment, that before I let the Dark One have any of you, I'm going to kill you myself first.
Yeah. It was very sobering, I think, for them. It's a realization that just because she's helping them right now doesn't mean that she won't kill them.
It's more of a case of, I want to find out why the Dark One wants one of you, whichever one of you that is.
And if it happens to be...
I can't find that out, and if the Dark One is at risk of having you...
I'm killing you. It's almost like, and even to find out what the reason is, and if the reason's bad, then there's still a threat.
Yeah.
Of being killed, because if she finds out what it is and she don't like what it is,
maybe the heir to the maybe the heir of the dragon is here. And hold on, you're going to take on the mantle of the bad guy. See ya. I mean, we don't know that yet, and this is still going to be very funny. Right. But anyway,
it's
so
just interesting. But that's, I think that also, you know, because they had, it allowed the opportunity to build the tension a little more between him and Moraine. Because Rand and Moraine, because he's still, you know, he does mention every once in a while that he shouldn't think a certain way just because he's been told so, that he needs to learn through observation, right?
Mm.
A couple of times, just little hints here and there. And yet, every single time the opportunity comes around for observation, he totally loses it if you go anywhere near.
Yeah.
His, or who he loves, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a fair point. All right, so they've all, they're all, Moraine and Egwene separate off at this point, and Rand decides to be a little,
which causes tension.
Causes a little bit of tension because, you know, Rand's not liking the idea of Egwene becoming an Aes Sedai, for one.
And also the influence that she's, Moraine is having on her.
Yeah.
And that's what's causing, in part, more tension between Moraine and Rand.
But Rand decides to, and this is something which has been happening for a few nights now. And Rand decides on
a few weeks.
Oh, whatever. Been happening for a little bit.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They travelled weeks. And it was like, really?
And Rand decides, okay, I'm going to find out what these lady folk are up to. And decides to sneak and hide behind a bush.
It's curious. You know, he's probably curious as to whether or not they're talking about him.
Well, there's, yeah, possibly. But I'm finding the actual conversation that, you know, that they have on this particular night. Moraine is essentially giving Egwene carte blanche, ask me what you will, and if it's within my power, I'll tell it to you. There are some things that, you know, kind of a line upon line, precept on precept kind of thing, that with some things that you should know, but if I can tell you, I'll tell you. And the very first question, I got to admit, I'm with Moraine on her response to it, because the first question that Egwene asks is the five powers: earth, wind, fire, water, and spirit. Why is it that men have got the stronger powers with earth and fire, leaving women with the weaker powers of wind, water, and spirit? I find that hilarious, because you put wind with fire, wind will put out the fire. You put water with earth, it turns it to mud.
Okay.
Yeah,
the whole opposites thing.
Yeah, and spirit, well, sure, I'll take yours. See you later, bye. Women have got those powers. and
yeah, we don't know how the instruction as to how they're able to or wield them. Use them. Yeah.
True. But I'm just saying that that's the...
Why do they get stuck with the weaker ones? Yeah.
I don't count them as weak at all. They are actually some of the more nifty ones.
Wind and water can put out...
Can put out fire.
It can also accelerate it too.
Water can't accelerate fire. No, but
the wind can. If the brush and stuff is...
Well, I suppose, yeah.
But anyway.
And here's where we try... here we get you know, some background in terms of what actually happened and why men are not necessarily trusted with the power anymore.
Hints, anyway.
Yeah.
And it's always a select few, isn't it, that destroys it for everyone else?
For so many things.
I know, it's so annoying, isn't it?
Mm.
Why you got people? Those one percenters.
But long story short is that she's she's a little afraid of it was the men who went and broke the who went mad and broke the world.
Oh, because they were trying to free the men. So Egwene was silent for a time as she was, you know, gathering her thoughts and stuff. And she said, you know, that they went.
They were the ones who went. They were the ones who tried to free the Dark One and the Forsaken.
And she's confirmed that. But my question then is, why the heck would you want to free a Dark One? I mean, the very name. It says Dark One.
I have got a 5-letter word for you, dear.
Okay.
Power.
Power? Oh, yeah. Because Dark One oozes, I'm going to give you power.
Because I will be I'm your humble giving. Servant.
Oh, please.
I mean, think about it. You've got, I'm going to just, and yet another Lord of the Rings reference.
I get that everyone does read and stuff, but it's just...
I should keep a Lord of the Rings job. Put 10 cents in every time I mention it, and I'm curious to see how much money I would have by now. but anyway, Lord of the Rings reference here. You have got Sauron being lead bad guy. His main henchmen, the guys directly under him, are the Nine.
they still get killed.
They still get killed, I know, but... But that happens when he dies, essentially. With the exception of the Witch King, but that's another kettle of worms and irrelevant to this conversation. But you've got the Nine, and then under the Nine, you've then got someone who's trying to be, another lieutenant of sorts, being Saruman. And the issue with Saruman is that he saw power. And I could go...
It wasn't just power, no. There was a little more to his story.
Not really.
Well, he saw into the future and he thought, There's no way around this anymore. He's won.
Yeah.
And there's no point in trying to
fight. No hope. I'm so just going to grab what power I can to keep myself in power, to keep myself from getting killed.
Killed, exactly. So if there was more to it than just, I just want
survival
power,
to a point.
It was survival. It was survival. He saw no way around it. There were two wizards left, three wizards left at the time. And one of them he considered absolutely loony nuts because he was nature.
Radagast.
Yeah. And the other wasn't nowhere near as strong as what he was because he was still growing in his power, being Gandalf the Grey. And it wasn't until he turned Gandalf the White and then overtook, him Anyway, the point is that there weren't a lot of wizards. The elves were withdrawing from the world. Man was corrupt and idiotic to him.
Yeah.
And it was just like, there's absolutely no way you're going to be able to band these three
tribes,
if you will, back together again to defeat him a second time. It's not going to be possible. So he's gone, okay, well, I'm going to just survive as much as I can and I'm just going to do what he asks, help him along, and maybe I might survive this.
Star Wars reference now.
Okay.
And then we can get back to the book.
Because we're mentioning in reference why they wanted to...
I know, to free the Dark One. Yeah. But all who gain power are afraid to lose it.
Yeah, I suppose.
That's another kind of recurring theme in so many different things. And it's here again, because...
Don't the best leaders make the ones who don't want the power?
Yeah. Take Martok.
Or Aragorn.
In case you're wondering, just for a thing...
Aragorn doesn't want...
Yeah, no fair point.
As well.
To keep with the Lord of the Rings, but, Martok being the Chancellor after Gowron, Star Trek kind of world, just for those of you out there needing a quick bit of background.
Star Trek. Yeah, no, lost me
there. Anyway, but all these people who sought power were afraid to lose it, and they often do some rather despicable and terrible things to try and keep it. And that...
Or get it to begin with. Some of them go bad before they even get it.
Well, fair point.
Because they're so...
But the point that I'm trying to bring, that I'm trying to make here is that we don't know what the situation is yet with the male Aes Sedai, only that for some reason, it wouldn't have surprised me if they saw their power being threatened in some way.
Possibly.
I don't know how, I don't know why yet, but if they saw that and the way that they...
Tried to free him.
In order to keep their power.
I get it, okay.
At least that's my argument for now, until we know more background in terms of what happened back then.
Or to gain more.
Like a whole hand-sized book in thickness to go through to, and that's just for this one, where we might get some more backstory on that. But anyway,
all we know is that the men went mad and broke the world.
And so the thing that that Egwene's a little afraid of is the fact that if she starts to get a taste of this power, will she potentially go bad too? Even though women weren't involved in that side of it, is there that that possibility? And Egwene's says she's not afraid. I want to become an Aes Sedai, but in my opinion, she's hiding it. She's doing a good job of covering it. She does. This is her own goal. This is what she does want. I get that, but there's this element to it that she's got to be a little nervous of. And Moraine is trying to say, it's good for you. It's good to you to have that conviction, but it's good for you to have a little fear as well, just to be cautious, so you're not just walking blindly into what could be a potentially dangerous situation.
She does admit later down in the conversation that she was afraid of the Aes Sedai's reputation, I guess.
Yeah.
So she's not entirely naive. Yeah, she's not entirely naive about the reputation that they have. And I guess in some ways she's wanting to reassure herself that the people that she is learning from, the person that she is training to become, is not going to be that person that has that kind of reputation. That she's still going to be a good, pure person.
Yeah.
And it comes out later on down the bottom of that page.
Yeah. With
the whole, wanting to remain so. But then there's also the fact that, good people can do bad things. You just got to push the right buttons, basically.
Yeah.
And it's not wrong. No, every single person you will find has a pushing moment.
A breaking
point where they do something that they normally wouldn't do in their right mind. And it is possible to do that. You can sit there and say, I wouldn't murder anyone, kind of thing.
But who knows until you're actually put in that kind of situation.
Yeah. It's actually, never mind, that's completely irrelevant. I'm not going to go into that. I think that you start to see some sort of sense being brought into her.
So
she's questioning.
Yeah. And she's showing that she's going to be cautious. Which is good. They start to... The conversation starts to break up and Rain realizes, hold on, what if she sees me?
They got into a little bit. So they talked about her being afraid. But they also talked about the men. And the circumstances of the Aes Sedai and why the men
go not specifically.
Or a little bit. So it was the men...
Cause the breaking of the world, but that's all you find out at this point. They went
insane, not evil.
Is there a difference?
Yes.
I can look forward to finding out what that difference is.
Okay, well, to be a person that's insane will do and try anything. But a person who is evil intentionally goes about doing things in a cruel way. So they intentionally do it on purpose. They want to make people suffer for the sheer enjoyment of it. An insane person, generally speaking, just wants to try something for the sake of trying it. Before they leave, though, they go a little bit into the Aes Sedai culture. Moraine humanizes it a bit for her. The men are not all evil and things. That there's good and there's bad. Both in men and women, there's strong, there's weak, there's cowardly, there's kind, and there's cruel, and there's warm-hearted, and there's cold. But they've got, essentially, any race you come across, including the Aes Sedai, are essentially the same. That they have similar weaknesses.
Which is a fair point.
In nature.
Yeah.
So you kind of... She does talk a little bit about... who the Aes Sedai are through her eyes.
Yeah.
Moraine does, anyway. But it's then that they start to sort of close up the conversation because he snaps a twig and she starts getting a little suspicious.
So he sneaks back, now back to camp, and tries to fake being asleep. Because he's a little worried about what Moraine would kind of Moraine or Egwene. This was similar to Egwene. Anyway, how they would feel about him eavesdropping, because it's probably a fair point that that wouldn't go down well.
No, especially with Egwene admitting that she's afraid the power will change her, essentially, and that's her main concern at the present moment. That it would change her into something she doesn't want to be.
Now take note.
He sneaks back.
You said weeks. Says it's been 6 days.
Oh, well, I knew it'd been a week. It was longer than the time frame you had mentioned.
Not by much, but anyway. So still kind of bumbling along, still training and whatnot. And they finally do get to, get to a top of the hill, that's just before Baelon. And here's where Len and Moraine said that's not their names while they're here, but they're actually going to be called. One is, I think she's Alice. And he is, what's his name? Alice, and Len is Andra. But he also kind of says that you've got to be careful here. This is a big city. It's possible there are dark friends here, so don't go talking to people that we don't know. Don't mention or even think about the Dark One or his agents. Essentially, just try and be as little trouble as possible, please.
Essentially become meaningless.
Yeah. Part of the crowd. Mm. The thing I find interesting is that when they reach the city, the guy who's manning the captain of the guard at the gate or whatever recognizes them in their undercover names. And it seems that in that position or in that kind of thing, they have some authority, I suppose.
Well, I mean, it does. I think the other thing that's because you didn't mention here is that every time they ask questions, Moraine or Lan questions, they essentially get given mute silence.
Well, they're very guarded with looks. Their answers there anyway. Yeah.
And so it's got to be frustrating for him to have to go by blind faith in pretty much most of this encounter and then have to rely on still in some ways strangers for your safety and for the trust in that what they say is true through evidence that he's been seen that he's been shown, the Trollocs and stuff attacking him and stuff. And I don't think that he would have truly believed that they were after him if it weren't for the fact that they attacked the farm.
True.
And that his father was hurt. Because had that not happened, there's probably absolutely no way.
But he would have gone anyway. He would have
gone. Because
what evidence would he have had besides that there was any danger to him?
Even if they had just attacked the city and they hadn't attacked the farm, I don't think he would have gone. Because in his mind, it's like, well, they didn't go after me.
His life is it. Not to mention the fact that his life was actually in Emmons Field and that he had no real desire. Even now,
has no desire to travel.
No, had he had a choice, he would have happily stayed.
Oh yes, definitely.
And I think that goes for all three.
You could see that he was. Oh, I don't know.
Matt and Perrin might have gone because they did have an idea of wanting to go through the big white.
I think Matt is the only one that really would have gone somewhere.
Hmm.
Rand definitely was a homebody. He just, yeah, you can see it.
Mm.
Very much, they sort of, like Frodo, they're reluctant to leave. I mean, they do like the idea of adventure, they like the idea of, you know, going on one, but if it really came down to it, the choice between staying at home or going on an adventure, they choose staying at home.
Yeah.
If they weren't forced into having to go on the adventure.
Yeah, no, I agree. But anyway, this guard guy, you know, seems, you know, does seem to recognise them in their undercover names, and so comes on down, kind of, yeah, sure, we'll open the gate, let you and your party in. And not a lot happens at this point when they when they enter the city. The guard is given just a little bit of coin to let them through, you know, just standard kind of thing.
But they're given their instructions to not do or say anything.
Yeah. And then they make their way to the back of it. They don't go in the front door of the tavern. They try and go in the back door. And the which I find odd, because if you're trying to remain hidden, anonymous, whatever, the front door would create less attention than the back, I would think. The back would, you know, who the hell's going out? What the hell's going on out there?
They're coming from the back door. Well, possibly because people would look in at the front door. If the front door opens, everyone would look around. But if the back door was to open, it could quite possibly just be the barmaid or the barman or the,
mm-hmm.
you know, whoever it is, the lodgings people doing washing or coming in, or, you know, it might not be as significant a door to look at. It depends on how the design of the lodging is. I mean, like if the back door is simply leads into a laundry or a kitchen area or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Then only the staff of the actual lodging area would know. Or the owner, as it were. And as you can tell, then it would quite easily be able to pay him off.
We've drunk the gun slightly, because there's a bit of a conversation that happens with the captain of the guard guy, which I'm just noticing. And they're basically using him to try and get some information in terms of what's been going on around. And apparently there was a group of Aes Sedai that went to Gildan to join the battle against the dragon. And there's no real word in terms of how it went. Clearly, but apparently it didn't go as well as planned, because some of the Aes Sedai had actually died in that battle, which, sure, yeah, people die in war, but I get the feeling it wouldn't have been easy to do, particularly if there was a large host of them there. I mean, I'm kind of picturing maybe 10 Gandalfs kind of going into this battle and trying to take out 10 Gandalfs would not have been an easy feat. Granted, one or two might have died in the process, but still. And, you know, there are some rumours still that this false dragon, or dragon reborn, has the ability to use the One Power, which is also going to... I'm looking forward to finding out how much of this ends up being true and how much it's just kind of puffed up propaganda.
You're thinking maybe it's someone else, like an Aes Sedai male, pretending
possibly
to be the dragon before he goes insane.
Well, that's a thought.
Because there are, you learn that there are male users still, but generally they try and catch them before they start using.
Or so using it too much, so that
they don't go
bonkers
and insane. Like I said, they do it for the sake of experimentation, not to be cruel, for the sake of getting entertainment.
Yeah. But yeah, after getting that little piece of information, from them, they've, we've got some, names that, people that follow, this dragon follows the people of the dragon. But yeah, anyway, after they get that little bit of information, they go inside and they find this tavern kind of thing and try and get in the back door. And although while they're trying to, you know, trying to find this place, they are talking about this prophecy, and there are, you know, lots of terms in there that, in terms of, you know, the dragon, in terms of the dragon coming back, there's, you know, kind of prophecies and kind of signs and whatnot that they're looking for, which is unclear. Because you got things like, the fall of the stone will be one of the major proofs that the dragon has been reborn. May the stone stand till I am dust. The sword that cannot be touched. That's what it says. I don't know whether it is a sword, whatever it is. It lies in the heart of the stone, the central citadel of the fortress. But
you know, that moment there kind of reminds me of, like, the sword and the stone, King Arthur.
Yeah, I wouldn't have surprised if that was part of, Robert Jordan's kind of inspiration, you know, for that little bit, but and they kind of saying, yeah, I mean, to try and stop that from happening, to try and interfere in that process, it's kind of impossible. I mean, you're talking about going into essentially the heart of Barad-dûr. Lord of the Rings fans out there, Sauron's fortress in Mordor. Yeah, good luck trying to get into the heart of that to steal the One Ring, if that's where it was. But that's, and so it, you know, they're kind of saying, yeah, that the dragon cannot come back until he's able to get the sword out of this stone, and because that is quite rightly saying, how can the prophecy be fulfilled if he's not able to do that? But, yeah, ultimately there's, it's kind of, well, we'll just have to wait and see. Yeah, anyway, they, enter into this, to the back, into the stable yard of this tavern. They get greeted there, you know, they're initially, you know, who the heck are you, what's going on? They're Lan and, or Alice and, Andra are recognized in those names, and, essentially, we're glad to have you coming in, let's get you cleaned up. And that's where the chapter, ends. So, just a kind of final thoughts on that particular chapter is
basically Gleeman telling that story, though.
Yeah.
Not Moraine.
No, so we don't know how accurate it is. But then again, because Gleeman loved to embellish, but
yeah, possibly
it is.
And it's also his interpretation in or about the prophecy too, because a bit of interpretation could be put into it as well. So yeah, it's good to note that.
So this has moved that moved things forward a little bit. So we're now at the major city of Baelon, on our way to, I forgot what the name of the Aes Sedai city is off the top of my head, but no.
I do have to say one thing though before you do it, because you kind of skipped over that part. You know, he comments on the fact that Rand essentially has an awful lot of questions. He's annoyed at that. You have an awful lot of questions, boy. Because, you know, and then, but the thing I like that he does say directly after that is, a prophecy that is easily fulfilled would not be worth much, now would it?
Well, that is a very fair point.
Yeah.
Because, next Lord of the Rings reference. Because
Rand is kind of like, you know, this prophecy, it's unfulfillable because of these things, and he's listing them, and it's like, well, you know, a prophecy isn't worth much if it weren't...
Well, it's kind of like, and here's my next Lord of the Rings reference, and I think final one probably for this particular edition, is, you know, the whole Sam speech at the end of the Two Towers. You know, it's like this, the story, like the old tales, Mr. Frodo, the ones that really mattered, and that folks in those stories had lots of chances of giving up, only they didn't.
Yeah. Although my favourite part in that section is the fact that, you know, I can't carry the ring, but I can carry you. That's the
third movie.
I know, but I'm just saying, my favourite part.
Okay, that's fine, but I don't quite see the relevance to...
That Sam... My favourite speech that Sam gives then, okay, is...
That's
that
not a speech, that's just a declaration.
Fine. Declaration. Verbalisation. My favourite verbalisation that Sam says is, I may not be able to carry the ring, but I can carry you. And I like that, because it's also allowing, if there was a prophecy in Lord of the Rings, that that moment would probably be one of those.
Yeah, no, fair point.
Well, that moment would have definitely been in a prophecy, I reckon, if they'd made a prophecy in Lord of the Rings.
Okay. But yeah, so... Yeah, it did move thing forward. We've got to to Baelon, which would be a bit of a stop. I expect them to stay there for a few days. Just kind of recouping from their trek that they've done so far, doing some information gathering before setting up.
It was information gathering that they went there. Well, not just for information gathering, but it seemed like there was a purpose, like resupplying.
Yeah.
For supplies and things. Like, yeah. You know, it was done because it was big enough to
hide,
to have them be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
It was able to fill their supplies, and it was big enough that information would come flowing in at a faster rate than, say, a farm or a
village,
you know, whatnot. So, yeah. I don't imagine that they'd stay for too long.
Particularly given the fact they wanted to try and remain as anonymous as possible.
Yeah, there's absolutely no way you could remain as anonymous as possible if you stay there for weeks or days on end.
Exactly. Not to mention the fact that I'm also finding that they did go there given how much they were avoiding the smaller places, these one-off farms here and there, and then they but go right...
But like I said, it's a lot easier in a smaller neighbourhood. It's a lot easier to remember someone's name, remember someone's face, if they're a stranger, because you know everyone around you.
Yeah, no, fair point. So, the next chapter is entitled The Stag and Lion, which I believe was the name of the inn that they went to. So, what do you think is going to happen here?
I reckon a few glee tales are going to be told. Because he's gonna do his thing, I reckon.
Probably.
So, there's a possibility of that. I don't know if it will focus on the prophecy one, though. Because whatever it was called, he named it. He said something about something cycle. The Karen Thorn or something like that cycle. I can't remember. Anyway, I'd be interested to actually hear that story rather than it being sort of discussed or explained.
Yeah.
You know, I'd find that interesting. But aside from that. Probably just that they rest and a few odd and conversations.
Resupply and
yeah, nothing overly interesting. I would
agree. I'm thinking this. I mean, we haven't. We're not looking at how long the chapter is.
No, you're not.
But it seems to me that this would be a good place to, you know, kind of, shall we say, pause, take stock, resupply, get some info before they set out on the next leg of their trip.
Yeah, it doesn't go for very long. We could read that and do another one.
Uh-huh. Okay. Anyway, thank you for those who have been listening. We are we'll try and do another podcast a little sooner. I know we said that last time, but this time we'll try and keep to it. maybe do another one sometime this week or another night this week or something. But if you do want to contact us, you can do so at my email, which is warrior346@yahoo.com. That's warrior346@yahoo.com. You can also catch me on my Twitter feed at warrior346. Or you can leave some feedback on the Apple Store as well. Thank you very much for listening. And may the Wheel of Time keep on spinning.